Van Dyke?
Well, absolutely. He probably has some good knife skills. We'll have to talk with him about that. We've got Chef Barnhart joining us this morning. Jim Barnhart, executive chef at the Hotel at Oberlin. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on today.
So how long have you've been in the Hotel at Oberlin? What, about a year now?
We're about 2 years in, yes. And I opened the property, so I've been the chef here since the beginning. Wrote all the menus, put together the food and beverage program, and just kind of did all that stuff. So it's pretty exciting. Do some pretty good food here and have an opportunity.
You learned just down the road from the JVS, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So here you are in Oberlin. What's that journey been like for you?
I went to the JVS like most students do, not really knowing exactly if I wanted to become a chef, but it seemed like a lot of fun. I really enjoyed learning hands-on, so I entered into that program and, you know, got connected with some chefs in the industry through a place called the Chef's Garden or the Culinary Vegetable Institute in Milan, Ohio. And I met the executive chef at the Ritz-Carlton. And from there, I suppose my career really took off and started. You know, I graduated from high school and worked for the Ritz-Carlton for a number of years. It was kind of almost like college in industry, right? Like an apprenticeship. And from the Ritz-Carlton, I took a path to another hotel company. And while I was working with these hotel companies, the Wyndham at the time, I was on the task force team. I flew around to different hotel properties, helped open hotels. I mean, I opened a Trip hotel in Madrid, Spain, a Trip hotel in Chinatown South in Manhattan. And also with the Ritz-Carlton, I kind of helped out other properties, Naples, Florida, Jupiter, Florida. Half Moon Bay out in California, and just a lot of different places. So I've traveled a lot and learned from a lot of different experienced chefs. So I suppose all of those little things you pick up along the way add to your repertoire. So the big thing for me, though, is I'm from Ohio. And in Ohio, we have some very beautiful seasons, some very beautiful produce. I'm kind of biased, but I think we have the best produce in the world grown right here in Ohio. And I love to cook in the seasons. I suppose you could say that I'm a chef that really wants to create a North Coast cuisine. You know, what's the Midwest, the coast of the Great Lakes about, right? And there's many chefs like me that are really trying to push towards that and utilizing the products available to us around us.
Do you look at the products and the crops and the food that's available and then construct the menu out of it?
Exactly, exactly. I really do stay in the seasons. I change the menu here about every month and a half, 2 months. And that's so that I can have beautiful things like this asparagus harvested this morning that I have before you gentlemen. I mean, you can't beat that. I mean, and also it's a part of sustainability, right? What's more sustainable, to go out and get a crop that's harvested for you for your menu and it travels from, you know, less than 100 miles away? This is actually from right outside of Elyria. From my asparagus patch, but you can't beat it. You can't beat the freshness.
Greg, we've never had asparagus on the morning show before.
No, we haven't.
Guest before. That's what, about 4 pounds maybe? Or is it?
I'd say this is probably about 8 pounds.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I've never seen asparagus quite that large, I guess.
Well, that's how it starts.
Yeah.
It's like any vegetable. There's all of it, and then you cut it down to the part that you're going to eat after.
Right, that, right. And, you know, I really like to, you know, you have these bigger asparagus pieces. Like this one's about a foot and a quarter long, right? You can peel that down and use the bottom half that some people would consider woody. You could peel that down and use that to make a soup or a sauce or something like that for your dish. And the good thing is it's very nutrient dense, right? This has been harvested this morning. We're going to use it this evening and for the next day. And it's still going to be packed with nutrients as opposed to something that you'd get shipped here from South America. Number one, it's not going to be as sweet. And number two, it's going to be a little bit more woody. It's been sitting in a crate for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks now. You know what I mean? So not just the asparagus we get locally, but this is like the best thing that I had this morning to show you guys, because I literally just walked in here with it. But you know, we get all of our lettuces year-round from Milan, Ohio. I also get some lettuces from Green Circle Growers, a hydroponic operation out in Cleveland. We use a beautiful lamb. It's Alessian Fields out of Cincinnati. It's just a really delicious lamb. For me, you know, do I want to use the best product? Absolutely. But what I like to do is find the best product closest to me. So That's really what we strive for here at the hotel at Oberlin. And
so, go ahead.
Well, before you became a professional chef, was there a time at home when you were a youngin where you spent a lot of time in the kitchen and thought, I kind of like doing this?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that one of my fondest memories in regards to cooking as a child was my mom would be making pies from, you know, any type of ingredient that she had on hand. Like I said, I grew up kind of, you know, in a family that had a garden and we had grapevines and all kinds of things available to us. So my mom would be making these pies and she'd always have some extra pie dough, some crust. And she'd give me some crust and some food coloring or just some other ingredients. And I'd press it out and she'd bake it in the oven for me and, you know, she'd let me eat it. And that's one of my fondest memories, really, growing up was just in the kitchen with my mom, you know what I mean? And my dad was always grilling out, too, and I'd be around and things like that. But really, it's that memory of my mom making pies in the kitchen.
So what's on the menu for this week? You're getting ready for the commencement and everybody coming in. So does this kind of change? You have to see what your clientele is going to be here, right?
So really, I don't necessarily change the menu based on volume or people coming to town. I just simply change the menu on the season. So this menu in regards to the nighttime, our dinner menu, you know, we have morel mushrooms. We have wild forage ramps, which is like a spring onion. Fava beans, peas, pea tendrils, snap peas. So we have a whole plethora of different types of spring legumes. Of course, asparagus. And then, you know, into the proteins, you know, we have this beautiful Alessian Fields lamb. We have Gerber chicken, which is an Ohio-raised, you know, natural antibiotic-free chicken. And then we also use certified Angus beef. We have a nice flat iron steak, which you'll see throughout our menus, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And we serve that just with a real simple sauce. It's a red wine reduction with a little bit of shallots in it, some asparagus, and just some whipped Yukon Gold potatoes, you know. And onto the potato aspect of the story, I really try to source things locally, as I've been talking. And there's actually a farm right on 113, a fruit farm called Grobes. They grow some of the best peaches and apples really around. I may be biased again, I'm from the area, but I just love their products. And they also grow potatoes. So when possible, I always try to use their potatoes. They grow a great Yukon Gold, and that's really what we try to use on the menu.
Are you the one then that goes out and finds these places, or do you have someone else to do that? Because obviously you have other jobs as the executive.
I do. Yeah, so I meet these people. I develop the relationship, and sometimes I'll swing out to the farm and pick them up. It's good for a chef to get out of the kitchen and see what's going on out in the world, right? But a lot of times the producers will deliver it to me, no problem. I give them a call and they bring me stuff. And, you know, I have a farm right down the road, Tyler Farm, and sometimes like his products will go to bolt, you know, where arugula will start to flower or something. And he's like, what do I do with these flowers? I'm like, well, bring them to me because they're delicious and beautiful. So I'll use those nice arugula flowers that actually have a nice sweet flavor and I'll garnish. We have a smoked trout dish on the menu and we just put those nice little tasty flowers that are nutrient dense right on that dish, and it looks beautiful and adds a nice flavor profile. So,
can you go into a restaurant and enjoy the meal, or do you look at it and say, no, I would have done this or I would have done that?
You know what, for me, I don't really break down other chefs' foods critically unless they ask me to. For me, you know, I work, I have the typical chef's life, so I work a lot. But when I get out, I really want to be able to enjoy myself. So I try not to critically think of anybody's food out at restaurants and things like that, you know, unless I'm asked to. But other than that, I'm just there for true enjoyment. And, you know, to be honest with you, I'm probably the easiest person to please when dining out because I'm not critical at all. And I always make sure to take care of my server and just, you know, I'm there for a good time. I'm not there to be critical thinking.
Now, so most of this is from the cooking aspect of it. You did have a reference to pies earlier here. What do you do for desserts, and do you have to kind of change it up, or is that not in your wheelhouse?
No, absolutely. So desserts definitely are in my wheelhouse. I have a pseudo-pastry chef, Stephanie Wilson. She does an amazing job, but I definitely am a big part of the inspiration. Right now we have, it's called a rhubarb and strawberry gratin. We're using strawberries from Krieg's Fruit Farm. It's out near Vermilion in Amherst. But and the rhubarb is from Mylan. It's Mr. Fry's rhubarb. So We take this rhubarb and we actually sous vide it. We cook it under pressure with a little bit of sugar and orange peel. And then we just take that rhubarb after it's cooked and we kind of dice it up with a little bit of strawberries. We macerate it in a little more sugar. And then we put this, it's called a champagne sabayon. It's like a champagne custard, if you will. It's like a sauce. And then you put that right over top of the rhubarb and the strawberries, and we just brulee that a little bit. Serve it with some sandy cookies on the side so you get that nice crunch that isn't too overpoweringly crunchy to go with that beautiful rhubarb and strawberries. So that's one of the dishes. We also do a 16-layer crepe cake. It has orange blossom, white chocolate mousse. We serve that with seasonal berries. And then an espresso creme brulee, which is a nice after-dinner custard, really delicious. We have a warm chocolate brownie. And then also, you know, when peaches come into season, we'll do something with peaches. I like to do a savory preparation with those, and of course with cherries and all kinds of things that are coming down the pipeline. Right now it's raspberries and rhubarb, or strawberries and rhubarb, excuse me. So
you're a good source if I want to know what's in season and whether there's good crops and where to go. I like this whole name dropping of every little farm that's in the community. So you have such a personal relationship.
I do. And I think that it's very important for the chef and farmer to have a relationship. I mean, without the farmer, the chef doesn't have good product. And without the chef for the farmer, you know, the farmer doesn't know what to look for. The farmer doesn't know how to grow certain produce items. I mean, they know how to grow it, but they don't know when to harvest it, what exactly we're looking for. And one of the most beautiful relationships that I can exemplify, I suppose, would be Lee Jones from the Chef's Garden. I mean, the man is an expert at that relationship with the chef to farmer. He listens to the chefs, and you know, if you want squash blossoms, he's growing them. If you want to order a whole squash plant so that you can use the stalk leaves as pseudo pasta and the leaves to make a beautiful green sauce, he can make that happen for you. You know, it's really listening to the chefs and farmers building, produce farmers building a relationship upon what we need. And then we're able to, as chefs, create things that our guests and our clientele haven't necessarily tasted before, and is much more sustainable in giving an opportunity to the farmer to be able to sell more things than just necessarily the fruits of the plant.
Almost everything that you can use out
exactly.
of the plant as well.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Craig's happy because you have actually Ohio maple syrup on your menu for that.
Yes.
He's not the fan of the high fructose corn syrup.
As me either. Know.
We've gone to other restaurants for spotlights. I've brought my own maple syrup.
Nice. Yeah, we use Ohio maple syrup. And a funny story about that. So I actually was at IGA. I had to buy something. We were down like milk powder, and I was making crackers. So I went up there to get some milk powder, and the woman who was at the counter saw that I was a chef, and she asked me about maple syrup. She said, "Hey, you know, what kind of maple syrup do you use?" I'm like, "Well, I use Ohio maple syrup. I'm getting it out of Chardon." And she said, "Well, I'm from Wakeman. It's a little bit closer. Here's my contact information if you want to make a deal on some maple syrup." I think she was like 17 or 18 years old. Emily Holcomb out of Wakeman, best maple syrup I've ever tasted. And it's closer than Chardon. You know, not that there's anything wrong with Chardon maple right. syrup, but you know, when I can source it closer and, you know, it's the same quality or better, that's what I go for. So it's about those relationships for
that's
me.
That's amazing. Well, we appreciate you stopping in, sharing the stories, and getting people excited about cooking, eating local, sourcing local, that sort of thing as well.
Absolutely.
It's 1833. That's the restaurant here at the hotel at Oberlin. Our guest this morning, Jim Barnhart. Jim, thanks for stopping in.
It's my pleasure, gentlemen. Have a wonderful day.
We will. And coming up in just a bit, we'll find out what's happening.